And welcome to an episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Oh man, like actually finally getting to try a bit of Sora, and gotta say, he's pretty fun. He's pretty fun. Gotta admit. So I'm glad Sora's here.
Yeah. And also here, and also have played Sora, is Tellius Tyler.
Yeah, Sora is super fun. I've only played a few matches with him, but I'm excited to break him down.
All right, and we honestly have a very fun show for you today. I'll be talking a little bit about a review I've done, and of course, Sora and Smash Brothers, and a very fun main event. So let's get all started off with, what have you been playing? And Will, why don't you start us off?
So, more or less, it has been generally a light week just because of work, but for me, obviously, the first things first, is with Fire Emblem Heroes, with the new banner, and yeah, with the Aurelius army with the coyotes. So like, okay, I never heard of them, but I've heard, again, they are the army of Harden, so a bit more lore there for a newbie like me. And yeah, thankfully if the RNG gods have been kind, again, I actually got two malices during this banner, as well, yeah, with Wolf, as well as one of the other riders. But basically I got all four of the main riders, including with the Grand Hero Battles. And of course, naturally with the Spark, I actually got Ascended Fjorm, which, gotta say, she is very good. She is very good when you want to deal with Tome users. But obviously, don't want her to be too much, or else it's gonna get overwhelmed with, like, Red... Yeah, I think, if I remember correctly, a dual Sigurd, Red Tome user. So yeah, just be careful of Red Tome user, and you should be fine. But yeah, with Fire Emblem Heroes, yeah, just continue on with grinding orbs as well, and of course, just briefly, just continue back on with Lost Judgment. I said too much, but it's really nothing much else to really say much until, of course, on Mario Party Superstars. So that's coming out in 2 weeks' time. So overall, it's been more or less a generally light week. So yeah, Fire Emblem Heroes, Lost Judgment, and a few other games. But overall, it's been pretty light for me.
All right. And for me, I too am playing a Fire Emblem Heroes. I've also been partaking in the new banner. And I got three out of the four, which actually isn't too bad. I didn't get the Bowman.
Oh, okay. Well,
but I got Ascended Fjorm. I got a Roche and a Vylund. And... yeah. So, but then I got a whole bunch of other five stars. Like, I was selling five stars out the wazoo, but they weren't the ones I wanted. And I was fine with it until they kept resetting my market. Because if you get, like, the upgraded five stars, like, going from four to five, that doesn't met script your counter. But if you get, like, a random five star, that does. And I'm like, wait a minute, I thought it was supposed to be safe. It doesn't matter. So, three out of the four isn't bad. Not as bad as Malice's art. Oh!
Really? You gotta start that?
Yes. Yes, I do. Anyway, what's wrong? Well, are you mad that I have malice about it? I know. So, I also have been playing Sora. I only played him today.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, I've just been so busy. But I have a tragic story to tell, gentlemen. I will no longer be able to play Super Smash Brothers for the immediate future.
No.
Because of Joy-Con drift.
Ouch.
No.
I've been fighting it for a long time, and usually once I get into the games, it doesn't affect me. But on my left Joy-Con, my control stick sensor or whatever, what do you want to call it, it continually reads that I'm holding it down, and I'm not. And then on my right Joy-Con, my A button, I guess, is either broken or malfunctioning, because I was trying to play Sora, and half the time it would be doing my down A charge attack when I'm not pressing that, or it wouldn't activate anything when I'm pressing the A button. I mean, I tried ejecting the Joy-Con and sliding it back in. I even did the old Game Boy trick of, you know, blowing on the cartridge, even though there isn't one, because I was just trying anything to get it to work, and it cannot, so clearly I need new Joy-Cons, which sucks, because it was like $60. So I will have to get new Joy-Cons, and until I get new Joy-Cons, I cannot play Super Smash Brothers anymore.
Just a question as well. Did you also try like that the trick with using alcohol to clean underneath the Joy-Cons, the Joy-Con sticks?
Well, I've been sober for 32 years. Does it really sound like I have alcohol in the house?
I mean, a rubbing out, like not rubbing alcohol. You know what I'm talking about.
No, I have not heard of that trick, nor would I actually want to try it, because knowing my luck, I'd accidentally pour the alcohol over the whole thing and it just short circuit.
I mean, just using a cotton swab, dude. Yeah.
But no, even if that did work on the one side, it wouldn't fix the A button issue. But yeah, that sucks, because I was like so happy. I was like, yeah, I'm finally getting to play Sora. Then I'm like, wait a minute, why is it keep charging? Dang, Joy-Con drift. So I tried restarting the Switch. I tried, you know, again, like popping them in and out, and it would work momentarily, or I get like half a battle, it goes good. And then other times I'd be like trying to do some damage outside the arena, then all of a sudden Sora's like plummeting down because he does his down attack. And I'm like, I didn't do that! So yes, I sadly will not be able to play Super Smash Bros. Until I get new Joy-Cons. So yeah. I will say that my birthday is in 2 weeks. If you guys want to buy it for me and send it my way, you know, give a gift to your benevolent host that's put up for you for 251 episodes. So, just a thought. But yeah, so that's the other thing. And then, of course, the big one was that I, alongside Tyler, have played and beaten Metroid Dread. My review is up on the website. I gave it a 4 out of 5. Very strong 4 out of 5. And so Tyler wanted to do a special mini segment for this. So Tyler, please enlighten our listeners.
Yeah, so I too have played Metroid Dread, and I would give it a 4 out of 5 also. But I put down some ideas, some statements that I have about the game. And since Todd was the guy who reviewed it for our site, I figure I would interview him in a way. Uh-huh. I'm going to read off a statement. You tell me if you agree or disagree. These are all things that I believe. So you know my thoughts on them, but I want to hear what Todd's thoughts are. And then if we miss anything and you have any additional thoughts that you want to put out there from your review, obviously feel free. So the first series of questions are about the gameplay. My first thought is Metroid Dread is a little bit too short. Agree or disagree and explain.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I mean, granted, Metroid games have never been the longest out there. They're not a Zelda or a Fire Emblem. But, and I don't mean like speedrun Zelda. I mean like just regular Zelda. But I beat the game in about 7 hours. I had 50% completion of getting all the items. And that kind of tells you everything you know. Because I know like some people, especially because of like the secret art that you could get, which is fun. But, you know, even if for me, if I wanted to collect all the items, it wouldn't have taken that much longer outside of like travel time. So even if I rounded up to say like 9 to 10 hours, I still feel that's a little short. So yeah, I'd agree with that. It's a little short, especially if you play like I do, which is just to get through the areas, get to the bosses, and get to the end of the game. So yeah, I'd say it's a little short.
Yeah, it took me 9 hours to beat, and I had 91% item completion, which brings me to my next statement. Searching for 100% item completion isn't that satisfying.
No. Not at all. Like, do you need to look for a lot of the items? Absolutely. Like, especially, and oh, we forgot to mention, we're going to go full spoilers on this. So if you haven't played Dread or you don't want to get spoiled on some things, go ahead and skip like 5-10 minutes ahead. Or just go right to the warp pipe bit. Yeah, it's not satisfying. You need to get these items because of some of the bosses that require, like, you know, missile barrages or the storm missiles, or when you fight Ravenbeak at the end, you're going to need all the health you can get. And I had a decent amount of health and I think over 150 missiles by the time I was done. And again, I was only at 50% and I was still able to beat the game once I got a rhythm with Ravenbeak's attack phases. So you definitely don't need to get all 100%. There are people who will go for it because it's like intrinsic to their gameplay experience, which I understand. But there were times where it's just like, I saw some of these items and then I would actually read later on about, you know, you have to have perfect mastery of some of your abilities and you have to, you know, do this on pinpoint accuracy. And like that kind of defeats the purpose. You know, hide them, sure. Make them out of reach, absolutely. But when I had, there was one where I had to go to a different room, use my run booster, or my speed booster ability, charge it up, fall or bomb an area, and then while I'm in midair, I have to do the speed launch attack.
Yeah, the shine spark.
The shine spark to the right, which was not easy to do when you're falling. And it took me like 3 or 4 times, and I had to do it differently than actual guide had told me to do it, because I couldn't figure out how the guide was trying to get me to do it. So I figured it out my own way. But I was just like, yeah, if I was less patient, and I'm a very impatient person when it comes to things like this, I would not have gotten that thing. But I did it because I wanted the it was a missile plus pack, so that was 10 missiles, so I'm like, I might as well get it. But yeah, like, that's not fun. That is not entertaining for me. And, you know, going back and exploring, yeah, sure, you know, seeing like, oh, I can use a bomb here now. But even like right up until the end of the games, like when you before I could get the power bomb, there were things that was like, I don't recognize that symbol, what am I missing? And it's like, oh, you got the power bomb, now you have to go all the way back so you can use that power bomb on that. Yes. Thing. It's like, no. I don't want to. I want to be done. So yeah, I definitely agree with you there. So hey, we're 2 for 2. This is a great start.
Yeah. See, I think that it would have been a little bit more satisfying if there were more upgrades beyond health and missiles, and power bombs. Because as you said, I had like 250 missiles when I beat the game, and I never came close to needing that many missiles. At some point, you're just getting the missiles for the sake of getting the missiles, and it rings a little bit hollow. Next statement is a positive one. Metroid Dread's final boss, Ravenbeak, is one of Nintendo's best, one of the best they've ever created.
Ooh, think about that. I'm not sure how I want to answer that, because he was a tough boss. Ravenbeak was absolutely tough. He has 3 different phases, different attacks. I think it took me 5 or 6 times to get around him, because at first I was just trying to figure out all his moves, because he has a lot of them, and it was just tough to get to phase 2 the first time. Then I learned the rhythm, and I'm like, okay, I can get to phase 2, you know, screw attack around the machine gun fire. I kept having a problem dodging him when he was doing his side slam in the second phase, because that was just bad timing.
Same
on
here.
My part.
I was never ready for it.
Yeah. And then the third phase, you have to use the power bombs on the sun or it's going to hurt you badly. And, you know, it took me about 5 or 6 times. He was one of our coworkers, I can't remember who it was, but he said like the Ravenbeak was kind of a terrible final boss. I don't agree with that. I don't know if I could say he's like one of the best final bosses ever, because that's a wide net to cast. I will say he was a memorable final boss, especially with the Atom twist. Like the Atom twist at the end, where it was Ravenbeak the whole time, or Dio even, right, Will? That twist was something I definitely did not see coming, and then to find out that Ravenbeak was actually there when Samus was reborn in early Chozo lore, that was a nice twist. So they definitely made him memorable. I don't know if I can honestly say one of the best Nintendo final bosses ever, but I could see why you say that on certain levels.
Yeah, I felt like he was the perfect test of all of your skills getting to that point, and the way that you progressed and improved each time you faced him. Like, if you beat him first try, credit to you, because he had a ton of moves that totally surprised me. But each time I fought him, I got noticeably better. And when I finally cracked him, I felt extremely fulfilled. Next is the Emmy sections are a little underwhelming. I think that the Emmys, they could have done more with them. What do you think?
I'm not going to agree as much as you on this one. The early sections with the Emmy, I felt, were absolutely lived up to the hype. Outside of the first one, which you obviously destroy easily. There was, again, I wrote this in my review, and I told you this last week, but like every time I died to an Emmy, I went, "Dread!" Because I hated dying to an Emmy. It was maddening at times, because I'm like, okay, I'm gonna counter, and then I miss it like a fraction of a second. And they did change it up enough at times to make it compelling, but by the end, I'm glad they kind of went away from like, hey, this is about the Emmys, to hey, this is about Ravenbeak, you gotta get, you know, to him. And then the last Emmy, you just completely one shot in a cutscene, and that was actually pretty cool. So for what they were, I thought they were fine. They were different than anything we had seen in a Metroid game, or even certain Nintendo games. And I thought they were great. You know, I knew that they would be a little overdone by the time we got to the end, and thankfully they accounted for that by the time we got to the last two Emmys. But You know, and then even just like trying to set up the shot to use the Omega cannon, like that was a challenge every time, and they knew to not make that easy. Like the second to last one, I had to do like a lot of running to get to that long section just so I could line up the shot. So I do appreciate that, so they didn't make it too easy to kill him, even when he had the weapon to do so. But I can see why you said that they weren't as good, but I still felt they were good.
Yeah, I liked them for the most part, but by the end, I was kind of sick of it. I felt like the solution to beating them was the same every time, right? Find the nook and use your phantom cloak to hide from them. And then once they pass, you know, you're free to go. They were also a little slow. Like, if they saw you, you could get away pretty easily. Like, you could just run and you'd be all right. So I didn't hate them. I loved the Emmys, but I felt like they could have been a little bit better. Final gameplay question. Metroid Dread's level design is top tier. And what I mean by this is the way the game guides you, it's brilliant. Like, in a game like this, you're supposed to explore. I didn't realize it until I was almost done the game, but I never didn't know where to go. And there was never a marker telling you where to go. It just always, the way you flow through the stage was, through the map was perfect.
I'll actually slightly disagree with you on this one, because I didn't know where to go after we got to the third area, because you were on this linear path for a while, and then you reached a section where you had to backtrack, and I didn't realize I had to backtrack then, and so I had to go to a guide to help me out, because I'm like, where am I supposed to go? And so, oh, you have to go back to this spot. And now, once you got to a certain point, it was at points obvious where you needed to go, like you need to go to this place, or you need to, you know, use your new weapon or thing here to, you know, unlock this one area, get to the teleporters and everything. I definitely did need guidance at times because I wasn't clear at certain points where to go. But the level design, the areas were absolutely top notch. Like Mercury Steam totally made it shine in terms of level design, in terms of the looks and then the layouts and, you know, all the different ways that you could get through an area in terms of like the things you needed. The foreground and background elements, that there were multiple teases of what was to come if you paid attention. Like that was really cool. So I do agree that it was designed beautifully, even if sometimes you could get a little lost.
All right, on to the graphics.
Okay.
Outside of cutscenes, Samus's animations are a little bit bland.
I didn't really notice that. I didn't really care. Mainly because in a game like this, I don't feel, outside of the cutscenes, it didn't really need it. The point isn't about the animations, it's about the different ways you can do things, like with the Shine Spark and the Screw Attack and the aiming and everything. I literally just started to aim with my arm. I don't know why I do that when I'm on podcast, but I do. I'm like aiming with my arm, and I'm like, you guys can see this, right? No, Todd, we cannot. But yeah, I could see, I guess on a certain level I can see what he does, but it's kind of like for me when I look at like Pokemon 3D models, I don't expect like all the animations to look that good. I just expect them to look like they're somewhat alive. And with Samus, I'm controlling Samus, so I don't expect her to have, you know, this infinite amount of animations in motion. In the cutscenes, we get to see her more in her actual element, with her being able to do a lot more without us controlling her. So I didn't really care about that.
Yeah, the cutscenes were great. I loved the Kraid fight where she just charges up the laser very nonchalantly, like this thing she's seen before. It's a giant monster. She's
like, didn't I kill you?
Done that. Yeah, exactly. That was great. I did love the cutscenes.
My favorite, and again, this is a big spoiler, in the final battle with Ravenbeak, you're trying to touch him with your Metroid arm, and he's just like, close your eyes, it's over. And then she like transforms and screams at him, and she like rushes him with her arms, and I was like, you don't tell Samus to die. Samus doesn't die. And I'm like, I feel like that was a highlight moment for Samus. She's like, oh yeah, I could die now, or I could just kill you and be done with it. And she gets like the Metroid armor. Like that was like, they really killed it with like the polish on those cutscenes, and like some of the stuff, like even like the really quick ones with the Emmys, where like one like pops out of the wall and she's like, oh crap, here we go again, and she has to run away. You know, they really nailed it, in my opinion. So yeah, these were really good cutscenes.
The Metroid armor too is my favorite armor that she's ever had. I love that Metroid armor. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and I know this in my review, but they set up a lot of potential for what comes next because of like that her Metroid DNA that she now has in full power, apparently, or at least it's implied after, guess, losing it with that final X parasite. They kind of make it a little ambiguous, but
it is ambiguous.
It's ambiguous. It was still a great twist. Like, I didn't expect her to go full Metroid armor. Like, that was totally boss. But yeah, that was hilarious. That was awesome. And then, like, using the final attack to just like blow Ravenbeak away. It's like, yeah, that's pretty cool. So
he almost got me. I didn't realize it was not a cutscene for like 3 seconds, and then he was like, "Oh wait, he's coming towards me real slow. Like he wants to get shot right now."
Yeah.
finally, for graphics, each area, each of the levels, like Gavora and Tataris, could do a better job of providing a sense of place as to where you are on the planet. Gavora was actually good, the outdoor one. That's the reason I remembered its name. But the others, I never really knew where I was in ZDR.
I didn't really care about that because I always inferred it that we were underground. You know, like, we're like in the. We never really see Samus land on the planet. We just see her go, you know, into the atmosphere, and all of a sudden she's, you know, meeting Raven.
Down the elevator.
Down the elevator. So we're like, we're always subterranean. That's how I always read the planet as EDR. So that didn't really bother me. I do think they could have, at times, made it a little more unique than here's a fire area, here's a water area, here's the outdoor area, you know. But, you know, sometimes the basics never go out of style. I mean, it's worked for Zelda for how many decades, so why not for Metroid?
Yeah, true. It didn't bother me that much either. I did really love the game. All right, finally, the story.
Okay.
Metroid Dread is a fitting conclusion to Samus's arc.
Well, not the Samus arc, the Metroid arc.
The Samus arc and the Metroid arc.
There you go. They specifically say this is not the last Samus, the Metroid game, but it's the last story in the Metroid arc.
Right, but through, it's like an anime, right? Through that part of the series, you have a complete story.
I thought it was a fitting end. This was actually something I praised a lot in my review, in that they reference a lot of Metroid lore in here, from Fusion to I think Elements of Prime, to Super Metroid, obviously, and they emphasize that, you know, the Metroids were what Samus was always hunting. Then came the X parasite, and then she took care of those. Oh wait, no, we didn't. And then there's the Chozo, who we met this entirely new sect of, with Ravenbeak, who was there at Samus's recreation after they adopted her. They tied it all together, and then they tied it all up while also giving, you know, potential storylines for the next phase, with her being a full Metroid, or a Metroid fusion, a fused Metroid being of sorts. So there's a lot of potential there, but those absolutely, especially for this being officially the newest Metroid game we've gotten in years, like true Metroid game, this was absolutely something that Metroid fans will enjoy. So yeah.
One last question. Metroid Dread's story is a slight overreaction to the backlash that Other M received. And the reason I say that is because the supporting characters are pretty boring in this game. Like, Ravenbeak, he's a great boss. But as a character, like, you don't meet too many characters, and the ones that you meet are, they're just there, they give you some exposé, and then they're gone. And in Other M, they really tried to go for that character. Right.
Yeah. I could see why you say that. I do. I don't want to say it's solely an overreaction for this specific reason. It's two different teams making the game. The Other M was made by Team Ninja, and who are very interesting characters themselves. And this was Mercury's team, and they worked on, of course, Samus Returns for 3DS, which has no supporting cast outside of Samus, to my recollection. I don't even think it has Adam, because it's the second game. So, you know, they don't. Maybe they didn't feel they needed it, and because this was a 2D game and not the 3D or the first person, like with Prime and Other M, that they. Well, that was a 2D and 3D. Anyway, it was a fusion. But I think it's more of it's just a gameplay decision than anything else. I don't. I think it was definitely on their minds that they didn't want to go full tilt, like they did, or even with a Metroid Prime 3 Corruption, where we had all the bounty hunters, if you recall that. They were supporting characters in that game, but I don't think it was an overreaction. But I do think it was on their minds when they were saying like, how many characters do we want to have? It's like I didn't expect Quiet Rope, for example. I thought he was a good character to help fulfill part of the story, and then they got rid of him, and then they didn't, and then they did. So you know, I wasn't mad that there weren't a lot of supporting characters. I will agree that I wish we saw Ravenbeak more. Because at first he was like, who is this guy? Then it's like, where is this guy? Oh, he's been here the whole time. And that was a good twist. But I do wish we got a little bit more from him, especially after that last conversation with him and calling right. Samus' daughter and everything. So,
yeah, he's Samus' father and he's just gone. Loosely. Dead. Like, yeah. Yeah. They were going for like the Star Wars, I am your father. But it was just... Yeah, it felt a little hollow. At the same time, I don't feel like that was a terrible decision. Like the gameplay comes first in a 2D Metroid, and that was just the best part of this game to me. I had a great time playing it. I'm definitely going to play it again, maybe on hard mode, or maybe I'll just play it on normal again and try to find the rest of those stupid items. Mm. I'm only missing like four or five of them, and they're not marked on my map at this point. So it's
some of them are like, stupidly hidden. It's just sad. All right, I got a question for you, and this is something that actually perturbed me. Metroid Dread should not have ended with the cutscene of the planet blowing up. Like, that's it. That's how they end the game. You do the Metroid armor. You get the X parasite that disables your Metroid armor. Okay, and then you blow up the planet. End game. Like, you could do a little bit more than that.
It did feel a little cliche to me that was the final shot was the Samus flying off the planet. Like, how many planets has Samus blown up at this point? Two or three, right? Like, so I agree. That wasn't the most original ending. However, I on my YouTube, because I've been watching a stupid amount of Metroid Dread content, I was served a video of what happens if you don't escape before the timer goes off. And there's an original game over screen of like the black hole from the planet, which is pretty cool. So I like that they put that little touch in there. But outside of that, yes, I agree with you. I wish that there was a little more originality in the actual ending. And Deus Ex X Parasite was confusing too. So do they control your mind or do they not control your mind? Because Quiet Robe was dead and then he got possessed by the X-Parasite, turned back on the Emmys to try to kill Samus, and then at the end he was like a good guy again, with nothing connecting those dots. That was
weird. And then like when he absorbed, he bowed and then turned to the X-Parasite, which gave it to Samus, and then it disabled her Metroid armor so she wouldn't destroy the ship. We could have had a little bit more. Just a little bit more.
Just a touch. Just a touch, like that's all we're asking for. So. But I did like that. The Samus becoming a Metroid was very cool. That was surprising, and the way that power was viscerally realized, like when you would kill the Chozo warriors that would attack you, and then they'd get possessed by the X parasite, and you fought that same boss like three or four times, and she would like drain the life out of it at the end, like angrily. I thought that was a really nice animation touch that showed kind of her becoming, not because she wasn't evil or losing herself or anything, but how horrifying that power is to suck the life out of something else. It was very visceral.
Yeah. So, but all in all, we both enjoyed the game. Most people who play the game really enjoyed Dread. Some of you are calling a game of the year or a game of the year candidate, and I agree with that. Like, what?
This
really
is the rare game that you and I both give the same score to.
I would have given it a 4.5 if certain things were just a little bit better. I didn't like the idea of consistently going to try and find items just because I had new ones. I felt at times that the game was more about, hey, here's the path to this item, and here's the path to this item, and here's the path to this item, instead of building the story in more ways. Like, I loved the Adam sections, you know? With him telling like what's going on and why this matters, and hey, you're not ready to face Ravenbeak yet, and everything. It felt good, especially with the twist at the end. But I felt it could have been a little bit more, a little more than just a Metroidvania title. And there was just the little things that, overall made it kind of hamper the experience. But I still thought, like, this is a solid game. It was absolutely worth the hype. And if you're a Metroid fan, or even just want to try and get into Metroid, even though this is technically the last in the current storyline, you should absolutely go and try it out. It's really worth it.
I
So.
can vouch for that. I've not played any of the other 2D Metroids beyond like playing the first one at Super Metroid for like 20 minutes on the Switch. And I loved it. I really did. I think it's a borderline can't miss Switch title. If you're a Switch
Oh,
owner,
totally.
you really should get this game. It's great.
Yes, I would totally agree. This is absolutely on the list of you must get this if you're looking to get like all the best titles. So, yeah. All right, Will, are you still there?
I never left. I'm still
It's like,
here.
I've been here the whole time. All right.
Yes, Will thinks he's better than Metroid. He doesn't think he's.
Well, he's still working on his
Okay.
No
Look,
More Heroes 3
okay.
review, so yeah.
To defend myself again,
No.
like yes, grant. Okay, I respect the Metroid franchise for what it is. Again, yes, Metroid, as you said, I read Tiles of Vue, and clearly, yes, definitely one of the top tier Metro games to date, if not for in quite a long time, until we get Metro Prime 4, obviously.
Hopefully.
So,
Hopefully, if we get Metroid Prime 4.
and yeah, like as you said, like it's. I've seen nothing but great things about this game, and sure, probably down the line I will get this game. But as of right now, one, maybe it's just the price, and of course, naturally with everyone getting the special edition. Like, I don't know. Again, I got the amiibo, I'm happy with it, and I don't know. Maybe if it once goes down the line, because as you said, the length, like, you think the price is validate the length? You think? I mean, I know that's not really a great
Yeah,
question to make.
we touched on it a little bit last week. I do think the price is worth the length. I feel like you could get an indie game that's similar in quality for significantly less, but this is Metroid. Like, you know, it is absolutely worth $60. I got
Yeah, I agree with
$60 worth
that.
of enjoyment out
All
of it.
right,
Yeah.
all right, all right.
If it
And
was less than 5 hours, which you technically can do on a speed run, but for the average person, you will not be able to play in 5 hours, and so I feel it's worth that.
okay. All right. And of course, naturally, with everyone, that whole beginning rush of everyone trying to get the special edition, which yeah, again, had help with some people, but. I mean, again, like if it probably isn't discount price, I'll probably will pick it up down the line. But as of right now, I'm just too swamped right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my defense. So I know, lame excuse, but sue me.
Lame. All right.
Also, we should hit on Sora as well because we have been playing Smash. Well,
Yes.
as you
Well,
said,
yeah.
you're. Well, you. Br well, Todd briefly, but
I
we.
briefly, very briefly. I won my matches with Sora. I will say
Even
that.
without a working controller, that's incredible.
Even without a working controller, so that was something. But yeah, what were your guys' impressions of Sora?
Will, you can go ahead and jump in first.
Yeah, when I like was just waiting for the release to drop at like that 9 o'clock on that Tuesday, and yeah, I just basically breezed through a quick arcade mode of it all, and yeah, he is definitely the most floaty character. But again, just how much recovery is insane. I think you've probably seen some videos, YouTube, that like he can literally go underneath the stages and just go and recover off from the other side. That's just how much airtime he's got. He can literally travel through anywhere. I mean, again, with the trade-off of him being the most lightest one, you can easily knock him out. But the fact his recovery is just pure insane. I mean, heck, even gives Kirby a run for his money. So, and the arcade mode, I almost got to a 9.9, but unfortunately due to the Masked and Crazy Hand battle. But yeah, just like again, all greatly referential. Even like some people noticed, like again, Sakurai put in the detail for his battle form. Like if you wield two items, it reflects it his pose reflects off the original game. So like a nice good touch from Sakurai again, giving respects to the original game for the battle form. And yeah, just how he plays, and just again, he gets very, very technical, but at the same time, he's fairly straightforward. Again, I love like the thunder spell. The spells like you can spam fire, but once you switch it out, you can easily catch people off guard with that thunder spell. So overall, he is very fun to play. He is definitely fun to play.
Yeah, I love his spell. The fire spell, I think, is a little bit slow, And the ice spell, I just cannot figure out a good use for it. It takes a long time to start up, and its range is very limited.
Yeah, it's foreign range. I missed so many. I think I've only hit, like, once or twice, so yeah.
Yeah, and that freezing effect is one thing I've never mastered in Smash. Like, I can never hit person out of the freeze to where I kill them. I can do damage when they're frozen, but I get frustrated because I wish that once you hit the ice block, they would just launch with, like, you know, full knockback. I think he's one of the most honest DLC characters. Like Kazuya has some weird stuff that he can do, and Steve is like really weird. They're just odd characters to fight. They don't feel like normal Smash characters, and Sora really does. And I really like that about Sora. If you've played Smash Bros, you will have no problem picking him up. And I think Sakurai did that intentionally because he knew that the demand for this character was from competitive and casual players alike. So he made his moveset something that will appeal to everyone. His like floaty jump is really, really fun. I like using his aerials. He's really good at edge guarding because he has that awesome side B, he can just hang in the air forever, basically, with some really strong aerials. I enjoy him quite a bit. I think he's a character that if I dedicated time to, I could get really good with because I love the sword characters. He's got some decent projectiles. He's not too fast on the ground. But he's definitely a unique character with a lot of strength. I think he's pretty good.
Yeah, the limit time I had with him definitely was fun. I liked how they did like the Peter Pan glide as his like just moving around the arena, and his blitz attack is very fun. He does take a little getting used to in terms of how much he can move. But once you nail it, it's good. Again, I had a slightly hindered experience because of my gameplay, my game controllers. But once I get new Joy-Cons, I shall be jumping back in. And I still haven't played all the other characters from Fighter Pass 2 and most of Fighter Pass 1, ironically enough, because of all the other games I've been playing. But I will definitely be enjoying Sora again. And it was fun going into Hollow Bastion.
Yeah.
So.
Again, I'm just kind of sad that we couldn't get Dearly Beloved again as a DLC. But again, you can pretty much get Memory of Melody for $25 these days. So if you want to pay $25 for that extra song bit, then you can. There's definitely that option. But yeah. I really wish they had Dearly Beloved in the set.
Yeah. All right, and with that, we will now move on to the news, and we do have some very interesting pieces of news. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. And heck with it, let's just stick with Sora, because the question has always been, can we get Sora without getting interference from the House of Mouse? Yeah, because remember, Kingdom Hearts is one half Square Enix and one half Disney. And three parts awesome and four parts convoluted storyline. Anyway, so the question was, would we ever get him if Disney allowed? And obviously the answer is yes, but it was not a sure thing. And Masahiro Sakurai confirmed this recently in his Famitsu column, which has not fully come out yet, but part of it was translated. And here's what happened. Apparently, he wanted Sora for a long time, and he knew that Sora was the most requested character from the Wii U 3DS days, but he knew that it would be difficult because of Disney. So apparently, after a long time thinking he would not be able to get it, he was at a, quote, Game Awards ceremony or something like that. So I'm thinking of the Game Awards, and there just so happened to be a representative from Disney there. Who would have thought? And they talked, and sure enough, Disney was all for Sora coming into Smash. And once they talked it over, they worked out the details, and Nintendo had to go through some strict things, including stuff we talked about last week or the week before in regards to Goofy and Donald Duck not being featured in the game, like on the stained glass in Dive Into the Heart. But they were able to work it out, and that is indeed why we went from 5 characters to 6 in the second Fighter Pass, because Sora was not intended to be in there originally, but after getting the go-ahead from Disney, they decided, you know, he will be the final character. I think Tyler predicted that one. So
yeah, well, you know what? I gotta say I'm an idiot though, because last week I said he was probably already had before they decided Fighter Pass 2, and this seems to have deconfirmed that theory.
Ah, so. But yes, we'll no doubt be getting more once the full column comes out. But it is good to know that, you know, life finds a way to get what we want. And we wanted Sora in Smash. We now have Sora in Smash. He is finally here in Smash. Life is good. So there you go. And of course, we now have to pay for it with the Nintendo Switch Online Expansion Pass. Because apparently we paid $1 billion to get Sora in Smash. So. Yay?
give and take. But again, we could still just keep the whole $20 subscription if you don't want the N64 Sega
juice. Also, there is one thing I want to ask you guys. Have you guys fought Kirby as Sora yet?
No.
No, I have not been online in a long time.
Okay. If you fight Kirby and Kirby absorbs Sora, you're going to notice something interesting. He does not have a Keyblade. He has Sora's hair, but he doesn't have the Keyblade. He has what's called the Sparkle Keyblade. And the reason for that is that apparently Kirby's not worthy.
That's so sad.
Because you have to be worthy to wield a Keyblade. And even though Kirby has a copy ability and Kirby is a Star Warrior, he's apparently not worthy, and thus he cannot perfectly replicate a Keyblade.
Sounds like a Disney request.
Probably. A question, dear host. Because like also in the review trailer, like didn't technically Mario as well hold the Keyblade, so isn't he technically worthy?
Well, no, he did not hold it in its true form. He grabbed it while in its fiery state and threw it, and only after a while did it fully form.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's up to interpretation, but that's how I took it, is that he reached to the flame, he threw it, and then it formed into the Keyblade. So, take that as you will. But yes, sadly, ladies and gentlemen, Kirby, as great as he is not a Keyblade Master. So sorry. But hey, lore! So, there you go. Yeah. Alright, next up we have Pokemon news. Lots of Pokemon news, actually. First up, we have the newest episode of Pokemon Evolutions, which talked about Getsis and N from Pokemon Black and White, the original Black and White, not Black and White 2, which, if we're being honest, I felt that was just an overreach. Black and White 2 was just not necessary. Anyway, this one was a little better, as we got to see at least a little bit more of the connection between Getsis and N, and we got to see like N fighting Alder and winning and all that, and Hilda, which is a fan favorite of the female avatars, she got to make her appearance. I just feel it wasn't enough. These evolution shorts, I feel like they're just treading water. You know, let's do enough to grab the feeling of the generation while not diving more into it. And they have these times when they can dive into it more, but they just don't, or they rehash what we already know. And I feel they can do better. Feel that they can do better.
Yeah, like in the beginning episode, that one was great with Leon, but like this thing, like the later episodes, I can't help but like they purposely left it like off that with that cliffhanger, like they just expect the viewers to say like, oh, you already know what happened, so you should film, like, but I want to see it in its animated form. Like you got so much great budget, and the fact that it's only like 8 minutes, 10 minutes most it feels like a travesty. Like we want to see this thing fully animated. Like our imaginations, yes, while it is crazy, we want to see it like how it would look, like how those battles would look in like high budget form. So like with this episode, it's like, okay, leave it off like approaching the battlefield and see Zekrom. That's it. Nothing else. All your imagination. But come on, you couldn't at least like show up like a beginning of the battle or at least or something of sort instead of a cutout. Like, it feels like there's definitely that missing potential. Like, come on, just give us a little bit more. Little bit more.
They could have done more. They could have done more. But the big news, in my opinion, was we got even more insight into Pokemon Legends Arceus via the Blair Witch. Found footage trailer. So I mean, come on, it was totally a Blair Witch thing. All right, minus the faces like right in front of the camera. So we got two versions of the trailer, which I actually thought was really clever. They did the found footage where The footage like cuts in and out with the guy talking about what he's recording in the Hisui region, and then he meets a Pokemon that apparently takes him out. It'll leave that up to your interpretation. And we're wondering, what did he find? Well, now we know that there is going to be a Hisui version of Zoroa and Zoroark, two of the easily the best Pokemon from Black and White. And wait, was that Black and White or was that XYZ?
I think that was X.
I
I
think
feel
that's
like
black and
XY.
white. No, I think
Okay.
that was black and white.
I will look it up. I'm pretty sure I thought it was Black and White too. So Zoroa region, regional variant. So, but yes, we are going to get a what do you want to call it? The fluffy version.
Yeah, like I get it, like the pink and red aesthetic, like pink and yeah, pink is it? No, red and white. Yeah, I believe
Yeah,
that was
it's
the
red and
colors.
white.
And yeah, just like one is just like okay, that is adorable AF. That is
It is.
just adorable.
Right.
And
Also, it was indeed Unova. So.
okay. And yeah, like if you have seen the internet reaction of it all, like everyone likes the Sisui variation of it all. So like, yeah, why not? It's cute. It's like of course the ending evolve form. Yeah, it's definitely gonna bring the whole fluffy version to the Hisui region even more so. I wonder what other is gonna get the Hisui treatment.
Yeah. What I really loved about this trailer, though, was that he's admiring the fluffy Zoroark, and I can see the shadows in the background. I'm like, oh, this guy's screwed. And then something happens. I'm guessing he just got knocked out. But like the Mama Zoroark comes around, and it's just like it's adorable as well. But I'm like, I don't care how adorable it is. You don't mess with Mama Zoroark, okay? Or Zoroark. And like, yeah. So this is gonna be a fluffier version of the dark Pokemon, but yeah, you still don't want to screw with it. All right. So I've always liked Zoroark because of the movie where it was the Master of Illusion, and its abilities was really cool. And they even showed some of it in the anime. But it was actually one of well, who was Lily? Gladion. Gladion had a Zoroark. It was actually his father's. But this is a really cool Pokemon. But it also again goes back to my question I asked to think about a month ago. Doesn't that mean in modern times, because this is a pre-Sinnoh region, doesn't that mean these Pokemon are all extinct? Because we don't see a white and red Zoroark, and we don't see the Kleavor that we talked about 2 weeks ago, or the regional variant of Growlithe or Stantler and all of them. So doesn't that mean that because the humans colonized that region, that all of these regional variants are extinct?
Perhaps the years of evolution or the timeline, of course, territory and climate changes and all that.
Yeah,
I mean, there's definitely that,
caused by humans.
or perhaps even regarding to, I don't know, maybe there was going to be a story reason included in the game for Art Legend Arceus. I don't know, but there's definitely the speculation of why these Pokemon appeared only in this timeline, this time range, instead of like in the current games we have right now. So maybe there will be a reason. Who knows?
At some point, they'll bring the Hisui variants to modern Pokemon titles. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if in Gen 9 that took place in modern times got a Hisui variant. But for now, I agree that it's clear that humans have caused the extinction of these
Yeah.
variants.
And the only reason I would counter your argument, Tyler, is that once Alola revealed the regional variants, you had to say that they weren't in other areas, even though there were obviously snowy areas in like Sinnoh and Galar and yada yada. There wasn't an ice type Vulpix there. There wasn't an ice type Sandslash there. There were or the super tall Exeggutor. These are regional variants because in these regions these Pokemon evolve differently. So doesn't that
Well,
technically
there was an Alolan Raichu on the Chiz in New Pokemon Snap that
That's
we have
true.
seen them outside of Alola.
That is
Now,
true. That's a good point. That's a good point. And that I would count that as canon enough,
I was
you
gonna
know.
say that's the question: is that canon? I say yes,
I
but
say
I
yes. It's
yeah.
a region. It's a region that has Pokemon. Like, come on. I mean, it's not like Pokemon Conquest where that was like, feudal Japan with Pokemon. So like that's not canon, obviously. But
Right.
yeah. So that is indeed a question that we will have to ponder, we have to ask ourselves as we dare to
Reflect on it.
Yes. And it just reminds me of Getsis and his fake plans. Like, are we not imprisoning the Pokemon? Are we not harming them by containing these Pokeballs? And then he realized that, you know, we probably wiped out a whole bunch of Pokemon in Hisui when we turned it into Sinnoh. I'm like, well, you know, you're not wrong, Getsis. So, I don't know. I'll leave that to you, dear listeners. But I want to say one thing. One more thing. The trailer, like the when we got the fully revealed trailer, it was beautiful. Wasn't it?
Mm-mm.
Like, it looked so good with how, like, they showed, like, the Snowrun and Zoroark and everything. And between this trailer and, like, the Smash Brothers trailers that we get, you know, they have these engines, and I really just want them to make a game with these engines. I don't know what one. I don't know how it would look in full. But, like, these are really good engines, clearly, to have, like, highly detailed character models. So why not use that in a game? All right, like especially for the Sora trailer, when we see like all the trophy forms, and you see like the details on Zelda's dress or the muscles on Little Mac's right arm, where you can like see it tense and everything. Like these are incredibly detailed models. I want those in the game. Like I want those rendered in this way for a video game. Again, I don't know what. Make it happen. All right, make it happen. Just saying. All right, next up is actually a question that Tellius Tyler was wondering about, and it's about Metroid Dread. So, in the game, this is a spoiler, Samus Aran technically talks twice, technically. She talks at the beginning of the game via her inner monologue as we get a recap of the events of past games like Super Metroid and Fusion and everything, but that's all through text, but it's spoken through her context. And then after she meets the Chozo Quiet Robe, she speaks in Chozo to him saying that she will finish this once and for all. And Tyler, along with another gaming site, wondered why that is. And in fact, the gaming site wrote that, you know, Samus doesn't have to be quiet to be a warrior. And I could understand that to a certain perspective. And that might honestly be an overreaction to Other M, where she talked a lot and it just came off very, very wrong because of the dialogue and story. But producer Yoshio Sakamoto talked about this with GameSpot, and he said, quote, "In this game, Samus barely speaks. The reason that I wanted to make it that way is the main theme of the game, which is dread. I felt that to convey the current situation of Samus or what Samus is thinking right now, that would be better conveyed to the player, not through actual words or her voice, but more with acting or visuals. I want the player to think what is going on, what is Samus feeling right now. That is why I decided to go this way for the game," end quote. How does it make you feel, Tyler?
No, I think they succeeded, especially as we said, in the cutscene. Samus is really aggressive. Now, I think she pretty much has two gears, calm and angry, in this game. But I do think she comes off as a badass in a lot of the cutscenes. I just feel, I agree with their idea. That, and in the article, Kotaku writes her animations throughout the game are kind of cold and stiff. Like when she's in the elevator, right? She just stands there in the loading screen. She's just standing there staring, motionless. And I would have liked to see a little bit more. Like in Smash Bros, right? Your character's idle animations are awesome. Like Samus, she like polishes her armor and then like moves, like kind of like flexes her gun cannon. I would have liked to see a little bit more of that stuff. Just little tiny details throughout the game that give her character more color. But I do agree, I don't think she needs to be talking throughout the whole thing, especially because this is a 2D Metroid game where you're not going into it looking for this incredibly beautiful story. And like I said, I think you did a nice job of wrapping up this classic arc from the 2D games in this title.
Yeah, I didn't mind. Like, the loading screens, like, I care less about, because it's very much like the Mass Effect thing, where, like, the elevators take forever, and then they just added those dialogue scenes just to kind of ease it. You know, I didn't need to see her moving around in the elevator, and honestly, I don't think Samus would do that, because she knows that the elevator ride could end at any moment, and there could be something at the end of the door that's waiting for to attack her, and so she needs to be ready. I was fine with her not talking as much, you know, and Adam, we think is Adam, at least, you know, he helps break it up by, you know, processing the data and giving information about the area and blah, 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 and motives and objectives. And I thought that was fine. You know, I was glad we at least had that and a little bit of Chozo talk. So Samus has never been the character that we needed to talk, kind of like how Link is never the character we need to talk because everyone else talks for him. And then again, with Other M, it went in the entirely wrong direction. And while I feel like Mercury's team would handle it better than Team Ninja, it might just be best to let her actions speak louder than her words. So, obviously, we'll all have different opinions on that, but that's where I land on it. So, yeah. All right. Will apparently has added in a new topic, something about Shin Megami Tensei 5 DLC.
Yep, and this thing was reviewed pretty much late night, which, again, I hate it, but then again with Atlas and all that. But anywho, yes, we finally get some details in regards to Day 1 DLC with Shin Megami Tensei 5, which, again, whatever your views of Day 1 DLC, yes, they're continuing with the tradition. So basically, we're going to get some new demons in regards to including Cleopatra, Mephisto, and I believe Alexandria. I forgot her name, but there was one more demon. But one of the more notable DLCs, which is coming on the release date, is you will be able to face up against the Demi-Fiend of Shin Megami Tensei 3. So if you have played Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne, you'll get able to get to fight him once again. So, again, a very tradition that we have encountered for many Shin Megami Tensei games. If you played Dirty Devil Saga or the prior games. So, yes, you can now face the Demi-Fiend in Shin Megami Tensei 5. And also with that, we also get to face off against the Fiends, which is the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, Daisoujo. Basically, if you remember the Minoru battles, you can able to fight them again here in Shin Megami Tensei 5. So there's that, as well as there will be early grind maps. So if you want to get Maka experiences or any of that sort, there will be also a free, also be coming out as DLC as well as release. So, and also during that announcement as well, like if you decide to go and pre-order, there is a digital pre-order bundle. So if you want to get the game, the digital version of the game, plus the DLC, you'll be able to do that as well. So yes, Day 1 DLC for Shin Megami Tensei 5. It's like, again, if you want more content, by all means, see you. But again, there's that argument it should be included in the base game. But again, that debate is forever there. But again, if you want content for Shin Megami Tensei 5 and if you love Shin Megami Tensei 3, then yeah, this is definitely the thing to get. So personally, for me, I probably will be getting it, sadly enough. Yes, but again, it's the Demi-Fiend. It's Shin Megami Tensei 3 and the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Who doesn't like the Four Horsemen?
The people who have to face them and die at their hands constantly.
Right. Yeah.
People who don't want the apocalypse will. We know that you're probably got your bunker ready, but I do not. I live in a one-room apartment.
Please, you watch Supernatural. You got the experience.
Yeah, but I don't have the salt. Okay? Or the rings, or the... Never mind. Also, I definitely don't have the 67 Impala. All right, I have a 2014 Kia Forte. It's a beautiful shade of blue, and it's my baby, but it's not baby. All right, and if I did have it, I would have to, you know, put it in a safe place. But nobody puts baby in a corner. Hi-yo! So yeah, but dude, that's a Swayze movie. Hey, Swayze movies gotta pass. All right, they gotta pass. All right. Now my Castiel impression. I'm kidding. I would do that all show. But all right, moving on to our main event. We are still kind of mad about the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pass price. It's stupid. It's so stupid. $50 for games that came out an infinite long time ago. And so we're just gonna do what, you know, gamers do best in this situation and complain. So it's time for Things Nintendo Got Wrong. I'm going to go first, because, gentlemen, before...
We should clarify, too. We're not just going to talk about the Switch Online. We're this is just a classic Things Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah.
You've heard our thoughts on that, and if you haven't, listened to last week's episode.
Yeah, go to last week's episode. We completely blast it. But no, this is just in general. We're just stacking it on. We're reminding Nintendo of all their failures, because they have a lot. But for me... Mine has to tie into my failed experience to play Sora for a long period of time today, because as I got the DLC for Fighter Pack 2, and as I got to the screen, I took a screenshot of the character roster, and I'll post it later with the phrase "everyone is here," because I felt it. I felt that everyone is here. But the when I really think about it, are they? Are they, though? Because as much as I love Smash Brothers, and I do love Smash Brothers, and Ultimate is indeed the ultimate thing, and we got so many great characters in the base game and the DLC, a few stick out as odd, a few stick out as not needed. And so what I'm going to say but Nintendo got wrong, and sadly what Daddy Sakurai got wrong, but mainly Nintendo because Nintendo forced it onto Sakurai, was characters that just don't belong in Smash Brothers. All right, and we're going to get start off with the obvious one, the clones. All right, I understand that there are clones in gaming, like fighting games, especially, you know, like Marvel vs. Capcom 2, where there's just a whole bunch of them. But actually, I won't even go that far. Smash Brothers, especially, Mortal Kombat to an extent, and there are characters that just, you know, that they're just different colored versions of them, or they look slightly different, but they have the same moveset, and it's really annoying, because you could use that spot for someone else. And Smash Brothers had it in the first game with Luigi outside of a few moves, and then came, Pichu, which was even a worse version of a clone, because it kept hurting itself, and then we had the Fire Emblem clones with Roy and Lucina and Falco, obviously. He only has slightly different normal moves and slight variation of the special moves.
Now, Falco is extremely different play at this point in time.
Like at this point, to an extent. Yes. But he still has the same moves, and he still has the dang same final smash. It just gave him a slightly different landmaster.
That's true, but his attributes are very different. Like, he's slow, Fox is fast, he jumps super high, yeah. Fox is okay.
I still feel they could have done a little bit more. You know, like, they have the Fire Bird instead of the Fire Fox. Like, really? You couldn't think
of
anything?
That's the exact name. Yeah.
Yeah. Or Falco can throw his deflector and Fox keeps it close. Like, yeah, that's slightly different, but, like, at its core, look at Daisy. Or, Lucina. Oh, Lucina has a different hitbox. Okay. We could have done more there. All right, and you look at the roster, and it's a great. And they call it, and eventually they do call them Echoes, and so you know we can have Lucina and Crom together, but they're not the same. And when you think of like all the requests that we've had, and we've talked about them over the years, of all the characters that you could have had in Smash Brothers, like Crystal, who would have played totally different from Falco because of her staff from Star Fox Adventures, and in fact they use her staff in the assist trophy, but. Or Isaac from Golden Sun, or Midna from Wolf Link and Midna from Legend of Zelda, and so on
or
and so
Mach
forth.
Or Mach Rider, from Mach Rider.
Stop it. Or the Chorus Kids, or Elite Beat Agents. You know, fine. I won't be a Grinch, but you know, there's all these characters that they could have put it, but instead they put in the clones, or they worked in these Echoes instead, and it just it feels a bit hollow because they knew that we would call them out on it. Everyone knew. We've been asking for to get rid of the clones for years, and I grant you they had to do it this time because of Everyone Is Here. But they didn't have to throw in Crom. I know Tyler wanted Crom in there. I know. But Daisy. We didn't need Daisy as an Echo. You know, that's just an extra slot that could have been taken somewhere else. And it obviously, with all the new characters we did get, like Ridley and the Belmonts, and obviously Sora and all the other DLC characters, they did make up for it, but it still stands out. And so whatever the next version of Smash Brothers is, I hope the first thing that Sakurai goes, should he work on it, is, hey, let's just get rid of all the clones, because that'll save us a lot of time, we don't have to worry about it, and, or if we keep the clones, like Falco, let's make sure that they are as different as possible, so that no one can complain. Like, that's, I think, is a reasonable request.
I'm going to defend them here, though, because I think Sakurai has said in the past that the Echo characters don't take a ton of development time.
Which is good.
So, like, having them in the game, it's not like this or that. I think that it's which kind of the conversation around Echo Fighters often devolves to, well, we could have had, you know, Isaac from Golden Sun, and instead we got Lucina. And it's not a one-to-one like that. Like, Lucina, they just had to create her model. I'm not saying it's no work at all, but they had to create her model, and everything else is copy and pasted over from Marth. So the time commitment there is absolutely different. I think the Echoes actually go the other way. I wish there were more Echoes. I feel that it would have been awesome if they had Shadow in as an Echo of Sonic. I thought I am stunned to this day, I like 1% of me thinks they're going to just surprise us and say, we're not actually done. Here's an Echo Fighters DLC. Diddy, and like I think that they're a great way to get more characters into the game. I do see your point though, that with so many of them, maybe we could have gotten just one new one, which may have been worth
it. Now the other side of this argument with the misused Smash Brothers characters is that there are two characters from, I guess you can call them the DLC packs. Yeah, well, they're both DLC characters that they stand out as unique. Absolutely. But did we need them in the game? The first one is, of course, Piranha Plant. Did we need Piranha Plant? I mean, yes, that felt like a total Sakurai move. And, you know, it was the original. That was the OG DLC for Ultimate, was Piranha Plant. Mm-hmm. It was just like, okay, we're going there. Like, yeah, that's a DLC. And I actually forgot about Piranha Plant was in the game until I looked at the character screen. There it is staring at me. And I'm like, yeah, there is a Piranha Plant in the game. Like, I'm not against it, but... Really?
It would be the same thing, like, I don't know, if you put a Koopa as a new character, or a Goomba.
Oh, the Goombas, yeah.
It's just like, it's... Piranha Plant is definitely one of the main outliers. Again, like, he is an enemy, an underling for Bowser, enemy of Mario Gang.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, you never expected a Piranha Plant, but again, with the whole species variation and all that, I mean, he is extensive to the sense.
They made it work. I'm not denying that, but it was really out there. Like, even for Sakurai. And like, everyone was like, Piranha Plant? Like, I remember like watching the Death Battle cast when the Piranha Plant was announced, and they were like losing their minds. It's like, this is the character we got? We got Piranha Plant? And I'm like, and at first I didn't really care, because I'm like, okay, it's cool, it's free. It was a free DLC character, you just had to like call in or something like that. And like, yeah, that's fine, let's cool, let's do Piranha Plant. But now that we have the entire roster, I can think about it and say, maybe that wasn't the best move. Now, Joker to start DLC Pack 1 was the perfect move. You know, no one saw that coming, pun intended. But, like, Piranha Plant. Really?
Yeah, the Piranha Plant first came, the Plant Gang, was hilarious. And I am thrilled that Piranha Plant is in the game just as a gag character. He's really funny. But I think years from now, when we look back on Ultimate and we're naming all the characters, because... Oh, we're gonna do that. We're all gonna be sitting with friends saying, oh man, name the entire roster. Piranha Plant will be the one that everybody forgets. I have not seen anybody use this character in about a year at least. And I just think he's destined to be lost. That being said, he was a free edition and it was really funny when he was
released. It was funny.
Yeah. I remember, like, again, the requirement to get him was I could just register, like, you bought Ultimate at the launch. Right.
Yeah. All right, and then the second character that I will maintain is forever a mistake.
Thank you.
No, I will always... No. It's Minecraft Steve. You cannot convince me that this guy is worthy of Smash Brothers. I don't give a dang that Minecraft is now the best-selling video game of all time. I don't give a dang of the wonderful, and I've remarked on the beautiful art, of the beautiful art that is made with those blocks of Minecraft. Minecraft Steve does not belong in Smash Brothers. I don't care who you are. He does not. And even Sakurai was like, it took a while to get Minecraft Steve to work because he's not a fighting game character. Like, he doesn't have a move set that you could use in a fighting game. And so they had to do the like whole building and, you know, using all the materials. And like, I would bet anything that he was the hardest character to code. And I think Sakurai even said something along those lines, because they had to talk about the crafting and the materials and how those affect different characters and everything. All of that just to get a character that's not a fighting game character. Or not even a character that, yes, there is action in Minecraft. Yes, I know that. But it's not the main point of the game. It's really about the crafting. And get it? Minecraft. And he does not... I was furious when I saw the Minecraft Steve trailer. I am still furious that we lost first party and third party characters because Nintendo I'm not going to say they sold out, but they sold out. I'm saying it's Aliens, but it's Aliens. That they got Minecraft Steve, all right? I will never forgive them. Never.
You have a lot of takes that I disagree with.
I know.
This is your worst take. This
no,
is
it's
your
not.
Worst take.
We've had worse takes than this.
I don't like Minecraft Steve as a character. I don't like him in Smash Bros. I don't like his style. I don't like playing against him. I don't like anything about him. He's worthy of being in the game. No. Minecraft is the biggest game in history. I know there's not a main character of Minecraft, but if you're gonna like, if you're celebrating video games, which is what Smash Ultimate is doing, you can't have, it's not complete without Minecraft, and Steve is the character. Plus, they have Alex, they have Zombie, and they have Enderman all in there also to kind of acknowledge the fact that Steve isn't like a solo character like that. I like I said, I don't like anything about Steve in the game, but he's worthy of inclusion.
Uh-huh. Allow me to disprove your argument in one statement. You noted that because it is the best-selling video game of all time, he deserves to be there. You remember what was the best-selling video game of all time before Minecraft?
Well, there's a major difference, Todd. That doesn't disprove the argument.
Answer the question! Answer the question!
Tetris!
Yes!
Tetris.
Where's the Tetris level?
Actually, it's Grand Theft Auto 5. I knew
now it's Grand Theft Auto 5, but before it was Tetris. Okay, where's the Tetris level? The Tetris was born on the Nintendo Game Boy. Where is the Tetris level? Where is the celebration of Tetris?
Stage. You could have a Tetris stage that would work, but there's Tetris spirits in there. The blocks are in there as spirits, I believe. There's a major difference, though, between a series like Tetris where there is no character and a series like Minecraft where there are. And
Tetris.
Steve was easy to make. Like, his moveset is easy to create from the
He
from
said
the
that
game.
I just told you the second I said it wasn't because of all
no,
the...
No, I'm not saying easy, like, ho-hum program, but all of his moves make sense, right? Like, they didn't make anything up. Like, some like Duck Hunt Dog, like, they made up moves for him. Like, his neutral B, he summons the gunman from another game because Duck Hunt doesn't have moves like that. Like, in Minecraft, the minecart makes sense as his side B. His jet glider makes sense as his up B. Like, all of his moves make sense, and they work in the context of Smash.
You're wrong, I'm right. Anyway, moving on. Okay, so I've talked to her a bit about my thing. So, Tyler, what do you have that Nintendo got wrong?
So, my issue is a larger issue that I have become very passionate about since September, and that is Nintendo's refusal to utilize Wario in more games. The fact that we haven't had a Wario Land game since Wario Land Shake It back on the Wii, I think it came out in 2008 or 2009, long time ago, is a disgrace, because these games were some of the most creative titles Nintendo has ever released. I talked about this in my WarioWare review, but the entire WarioWare series is this slightly off-center, bizarre world where you feel like the creative minds at Nintendo let their guards down and stop worrying about what's easy to market and what's friendly to, what's going to look great on shelves and how can you push merch to kids. They forget about all of that stuff. And their crazy minds just set to work creating these bizarre worlds with colorful, bizarre characters. And the games that result from them are unpredictable, chaotic, and yet completely polished and fun Nintendo titles in the way that you would expect from all the best. I have played Wario Land 3 and Wario Land 4 on the 3 on the Game Boy Color and 4 on the Game Boy Advance. And both of those games were some of my favorite titles for the system. Wario Land 4 was a little bit short, but fun nonetheless. The way that they kind of shadow Mario titles, but slow the pace down and put an emphasis on exploration is really rewarding and unique. They're not Metroidvania games, but they're also not traditional platformers. And Nintendo doesn't have another brand that's sort of filled their role, right? Like, when you think of the other Nintendo franchises that have kind of gone by the wayside, Donkey Kong has been completely neglected over the years. It, as painful as it is, it makes a little bit of sense because they have 2D Mario and they have 2D Kirby that they can put in, and 2D Yoshi that can fill that void. Wario Land doesn't really, has never really been replaced. It's just been kind of forgotten. And to me, that's just, that's a sin that needs to be amended on Switch. I don't know how well WarioWare sold, but there's a major difference between WarioWare and Wario Land. And I'd be curious to see what the, whether or not the sales of Ware will affect Nintendo's interest in making Land, but they really should come out with another one soon.
Yeah, this is absolutely a case of, you know, using all of the pie, you know, because we know that they've done well with Mario and Zelda and now Metroid, because they did Dread and now they got Prime 4, hopefully, coming. And but there's these other things that we know that they could bring, and they're not yet. WarioWare, maybe if it does well, they'll go back to Wario Land. It is very much an oddball title series, and yet one that has endured despite it being Wario. Not an insult, just a fact. So I do agree that that's actually something else we could talk about. That, you know, we're about to go to year five of the Switch, and yeah, they still haven't used some of their big name titles like Star Fox or Donkey Kong or you know, some of these others, because they just haven't for whatever reason. So, you know, if WarioWare Get It Together does well, I myself have not heard anything about sales, but we might hear about something soon. Let's see, when did it come out?
It came out September.
September
10th.
Okay, so we might actually hear something soon, because that the end of September was the end of the last quarter. So we might hear something soon. We'll just have to see. But if that does well, then maybe they think, hey, let's make another WarioWare title. Hey, we got that Wario Land title we could do. You never know. So there is potential there. But they absolutely need to go in, you know, dive into all these other franchises, especially as we head into the back half of the Switch life. So
yeah, you put it really well. It is a case of using the entire pie. Nintendo really looked like they were going to do that in the first year of the Switch, where we had Mario, we had Zelda, we had Splatoon, and then we had
ARMS.
Right, yeah, they brought out a new IP there, and then we get Xenoblade at the end of the year. Like, they really did a nice job. They had Fire Emblem, was already announced. Like, they did a great job of bringing all of their franchises to the front, but a few of them have been left behind, and I think that some of the ones that they're leaving behind are really great, and they're titles that maybe they aren't as commercially successful, but the gamers and the industry as a whole are better for having them. And I think Wario Land is one of those, a perfect example of an innovative platformer that kind of pushes the genre in unique ways.
Yeah, we're still waiting on F-Zero. I'm just
saying.
Well,
I'm not waiting on F-Zero.
Keith is our boss. Keith is waiting on F-Zero.
If they came out with an F-Zero, I'm sure it would be great. But I really think that is a series that should wait till 4K. Like, if they have the next console is 4K, F-Zero would be the perfect game for 4K. Mario Kart would be awesome, but F-Zero just got that extra edge and that extra detail that you want for a 4K console.
Yeah. Okay, I'll top that. You ready? What if instead of that, they make one of those, I say this right, like those super arcade cabinets, like the ones that, you know, you sit in and like the screens are all around you and you have like the very in-depth control system, and they make like a line of like these arcade cabinets and they put that in a special section of the Super Nintendo World, you know, like the theme park. So that you're actually, you'll have like kind of like a VR experience, but like with the, I think you know what I'm talking
that
about.
That would
right?
be awesome. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, they have them in Busters and they're like the most fun things. That would be awesome. Yeah, especially if you had like the cars giving you like effects, right? Like you go over a ramp and then a fan blows in your face.
Yeah, and like and they can shift in place as you take like tight turns and everything. So like imagine like four of those in a spot, and so it's like four players, and then you got all the computer run ones, and like that's how you bring back F-Zero as like this interactive experience, and then they bring it back to the games because everyone's like, you know, this is awesome, but we need this on the Switch. You know, that would be cool.
That would be great. That would be absolutely awesome.
And that would be totally different than what they have with the Mario Kart at Super Nintendo World. So, yeah.
Maybe the Nintendo Switch Online with the N64 titles bringing F-Zero, I believe, is in there.
I think it is, yes.
That might renew a little bit of interest in the series.
Let me think about that. No. Yeah, that would require people to actually buy the expansion.
I do wonder how it's going to do.
I would bet you anything. Because, like, remember, we talked about this before. You'd think that the Switch Online subscriptions would be a one-to-one thing. But that's not the case. It's not like I don't even think it's half. And we're like almost 90 million consoles, and not even half of its user base has Nintendo Switch Online. So how many of them realistically are going to get the expansion when it's, you know, over double the price, and the content is like, you know, 15 to 20 years old. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that's to say. Sadly, Will had a family thing happening, so he had to exit. And so with that, sadly, he was going to complain. What was he going to complain about?
Joy-Con drift.
You know, well, let's talk about that, because I laughed this off when it first happened. I'm like, okay, you guys got unlucky, got a bad Joy-Con, whatever. I was just hoping it didn't happen to me. But now that I have been crushed in my desire to return to Super Smash Brothers because of Joy-Con drift and a broken button, I can sympathize now. Like, how did this escape them? Like, was it really just some of them were programmed differently? I never really understood what Joy-Con drift actually is.
So I believe, now I've heard multiple things. I just had my Switch repaired, and the guy at You Break, I Fix, so take this up with them if you think that they're wrong, said that there's just a rubber band that snaps the controller back in place, and when the rubber band breaks, the Joy-Con stop working. I also heard that there's a piece of foam that is like blocking the reader. Like sometimes, there's like a odd piece of foam that blocks it when you're playing, and then eventually, like, your scanner just runs out of juice to like break through that foam. I've heard a ton of things over the years. Nintendo knows, though. When you send it to them, they always send it back and it works again. So I have no idea. But every iteration of Joy-Con still has the problem. They haven't fixed it yet, and they've released new Joy-Cons.
Yeah. And I mean, like, if I had known that this would happen, I probably would have done like Will and gotten those Legend of Zelda Joy-Cons just because they look really cool. But yeah, this is definitely like, because we know that Nintendo at times goes really weird with the controller designs. You can look at the N64 or the GameCube controller for proof of that. But, you know, this is different. This is, you know, a fundamental issue that has affected many players. They even got sued over this, if I recall correctly. Like, didn't they get sued over Joy-Con drift? So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were.
Yeah, so, like, that's bad when it's so bad that you need to get, you know, suit.
I think they were required to them for free is what the result of that lawsuit was.
Yeah. So, I feel bad now because it's happening to me, which is the typical human condition. Oh, I don't care about it. It's happening to you now. I care so much. So, yeah. But I can understand why we would consider this one of their big beefs, because yeah, it's not good. And it's affecting their best, arguably their best console ever. So that's even worse, because that means that they didn't think this could happen. And yet it did on a large scale, and that's really on them. So, such is life. All right, and with that, definitively, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, last week we asked you if you think Nintendo was making a mistake with the Switch Online pricing, and 86% of you said yes, 0% said no, 14% said I will regretfully buy it, and 0% said you haven't even bought the original yet.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Oy vey. All right, so this week's poll question... Nah.
Yeah, let's take the week off.
Yeah, let's take a week off. There honestly hasn't been anything, really. So, you have been spared. You have been spared. Alright, but of course, do let us know about everything else, such as if you have been playing Metroid Dread, let us know how you have been enjoying it. If you've gotten Sora, which I would imagine many of you have, how are you enjoying his gameplay? Hopefully you are getting to play it longer than I. what did you think about the new Pokemon Arceus trailer and the found footage? And are you going to be getting the Shin Megami Tensei 5 DLC when that comes out? Let me know. Let us know in the comments below. So for Wario Will and Telia Styler, I am Triforce Style. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. You made it to the end of the level. So raise the flag.